It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back, Football Monday. Just thinking about, from watching the game yesterday on TV, the crowd, how it was another seemingly impressive showing by the Bills fans on the road. Against kind of a, you know, what are the Colts as a fan base? Normal, maybe even less, just sort of there.
Yeah.
Not renowned for
sure
how well they travel. I saw three games like that yesterday. The Pittsburgh-Washington really sounded like the Steelers.
Yeah.
And then Detroit-Houston last night with all the interceptions really sounded like the Lions. You know, I guess throw Montreal-Buffalo in there this afternoon.
There were a lot of Calgary fans in the building Saturday, too, I'll tell you.
If not for the horn, you wouldn't know which team scored, sadly.
Right.
Eric Wood on the Wester Hotline. Eric, you were there. What was this game for how well-represented Bills fans were?
It was strong again, and it's becoming a consistent theme now. But, it was strong. I would say there's other spots that it was probably a bigger crowd this year, but – it was another week where, you know, Colts players or media had mentioned that, okay, this is a pretty big takeover by the Bills Mafia again. Like, all the reports of the Seattle game and Geno Smith saying it felt like a road game at times in there. Okay, I'm buying it. Pat McAfee said at one point he was trying to quiet down the fans himself, and then realized, oh, it's not the Colts fans cheering for the Colts offense. It's the Bills trying to make it difficult on them to snap the football. And so it's awesome. Sean McDermott mentions it each time they play a road game. And, you know, he'll mention the fact that it's not lost on them when the crowd's there. And I'll tell you what, when you run out for pregame warmups and you're in a away stadium and you hear a cheer because of how many Bills fans are in attendance, it's a good feeling as a player.
Is it different than in your playing days? Has the success of the team meant for a greater amount of this? Because, I mean, I grew up a Bills fan in the 80s, and there were great teams at the end of that run, and they were already then, I think, famous for... I mean, it's easier to get around now, maybe, but...
And tickets are more attainable, I think.
Yeah, that's big, right?
Right, yeah. Secondary market, that kind of thing.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean... we played a game at Carolina my rookie year, and I couldn't believe how many Bills fans were there. And I understand there's a big, like, Carolina's Buffalo contingent that's been a popular spot for people from Buffalo or Western New York to move over the years. So, you know, maybe some of them live there or bring people in town. That was the first time in my career that I thought to myself, wow, there is a massive amount of Bills fans here. My final game was in Jacksonville in the playoff game. And Bills fans tried to buy up half the stadium for that one. And so it was definitely there while I was playing. I would say it's become more consistent now. I mean, the popularity of this team nationally has just grown tremendously too. And just, you know, we walk around airports or walk around amusement parks and you see random Bills gear all over the country. And I don't feel like I saw as much of that when I was playing. But I guess I wasn't in as many airports traveling each week like I do now.
right. Traveling on the charters, a different lifestyle, I suppose.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was in Europe in the summer, and I wore a white Bills hat with a standing blue buffalo on it extensively on this trip. And I very badly wanted just one Go Bills out of someone on the street in Barcelona, and I never got it. And I mentioned it to a flight attendant on the way back. And because he mentioned the hat, recognized it, and said, Buffalo. I said, yeah, we're flying to Toronto. We live in Buffalo. I said, I wore this damn hat for 10 days around Spain, and I never got one acknowledgement. He said, they all thought it was just a bull.
Or that you don't know Go Bills in Spanish.
Right. Maybe that's it.
That's good. I like that story.
All right, Eric. Well, let's put yesterday's game to bed. As I often ask you, what is the most memorable thing about it? I mean, Taron Johnson right away. And, you know, you're never – well, that's not true. The Colts
did
take
fall
the lead.
Behind, yeah.
I'm wrong about that. Yesterday's highlight or two for you?
Yeah, I would say the pick six from Taron Johnson on their first play of the game. That just a remarkable play. I was watching from upstairs in the booth and assumed they were in man-to-man coverage by their defensive linemen. I'm not sure if Joe Flacco was fooled or not, but I was, just based upon kind of just the alignment of the defense. I assumed it was man, and you know, I'm like, oh, that's interesting. The Bills are in man the first play of the game. They run primarily zone, and then Taron drops back into that like little. I'm assuming when they shifted to zone, they thought it was cover three. And Taron said after the game they were going to pick on, you know, that spot that Miami hit, and so then he gets the interception and takes it to the house. That was certainly a highlight. It was a roller coaster ride of a game. I mean, just there was a lot of turn. You know, Bills had two turnovers. They had four. There was multiple. The Bills had a turnover on downs. They had a couple. I mean, it was just there was a lot of kind of back and forth, a lot of excitement in the game. And then beyond that, I mean, I guess maybe the two plays to Mac Hollins. Those were kind of the heroic Josh Allen scrambling out of the pocket, bigger plays down the field. But to me, it wasn't the Bills' sharpest performance on offense. They scored 23 on offense, 30 in the game, get over 30 points for the fourth straight game, which is remarkable. And, you know, it's just, to me, the Colts, they played all one, you know, their record was 4-5 heading into the game. It's a team still very much so in the mix, the way the AFC is shaping out. They have quality guys on both sides of the ball. Bills didn't necessarily have their best off offensively and, you know, should have won that game by 17 points. So, you know, this is a it's a good feeling when you can play a quality team. I'm not going to sit here and say they're one of the top teams in the AFC, but, you know, it is what it is. They've played teams tough this year, and when the Bills didn't necessarily have it, they turn the ball over twice. Josh doesn't throw a touchdown. You're out Cooper. You're out Coleman. Kincaid goes out of the game. They still find a way to run away with it at the end.
Yeah, we've been, you know, we're easing into the Sabres season here, you know, just a little more than a month old here. And A game, B game, like finding a way to win when you're not your best has been kind of a topic of conversation amongst the hockey team here. And I felt like I was thinking about that yesterday watching this Bills win. Because I also didn't think they had their best stuff, but their B game was good enough.
Right, and I'll give you one more. I mean, you go into the half and you gave up 107 yards to Jonathan Taylor. That's your concern. Are they just going to pound the ball? Is this going to look like the game from 2021 where Jonathan Taylor runs wild and instead they hold him to 7 yards on 5 carries in the second half? 50% of his yards came on the one run in the game. And then I do this every week because I look at all the advanced stats and all that, and then you know, you could take stats and do whatever you want with them, but you only averaged 2.8 yards per carry the whole rest of the game. So, you know, especially in the second half, they did a great job making adjustments. And that's been a theme this year. I mean, they've crushed teams in the third quarter and the second half of games. And I saw it earlier, they outscored their opponents 79-23 in the third quarter of games this year. And so whether that's just in-game adjustments, I said, you know, the Bills make great halftime adjustments, and someone brought up a point to me, and this is fair, on Twitter, that, you know, there's not that much time at halftime. Isn't it more in-game adjustments? And I said, that's fair, because every time we go to the sideline, you're constantly working on and working through the previous series, and what do we need to do better? So, you know, I give the Bills coaching staff a lot of credit that throughout this season, they've been able to adjust in games and play a really strong second half.
One observation I had from a play in this game that was a significant play, the Austin Johnson interception, Eric, was a lot of things came together there, but like watching it back today, man, I don't know how you felt watching it live, because I was reminded watching the replays today that when that play was happening live, I was terrified. I mean, you only had a moment to think about it, but it looked like that was there. And if Flacco puts that ball on Taylor, there, it's probably a touchdown, but Miller gets in Flacco's face. It's like the margins are just so slim, and I'm sure you can do this every game, but this play just jumped out at me as a play that swung completely the other way, because I think that's 7 points if Miller doesn't rush Flacco into that throw that ends up right at Austin Johnson. I mean, it's not really a question. It's more just an observation, like how slim the difference between a game-changing touchdown for them and a, you know, a touchdown-saving interception by a lineman can end up being.
Oh, you're exactly right. I mean, as an offensive player, when we call a screen, we are begging for you to blitz. I mean, please send a blitz. Get as many guys as you can on our side of the line of scrimmage because we're going to dump it right over your head. Now we have a convoy of blockers, and we're out the gate. And so that was set up. That's twice this year that Austin Johnson has been the one to sniff out the screen. And so give him credit. I mean, he made two interceptions. Those are game-changing plays when those happen. But like you said, it's everyone working in unison. It's guys flying around all over the place that allows, you know, it allows Austin Johnson to get that pick. And I thought Von Miller had some pretty good spark in his step yesterday and doesn't get a sack in the game, but there was multiple times where he affected Flacco in the pocket and then drew a false start. And then on one play, I thought Von Miller false started. I know you guys don't listen to the broadcast, but
hey.
I thought Von Miller – I got to throw
encroached.
That in like once a month.
Yeah.
Once a month. But I thought Von Miller jumped off sides because, you know, he gets that lean going right before the snap. Well, it looked like a false start because of how much distance was between him and the right tackle, Braden Smith. Well, that's because Braden Smith, because he was getting smoked, was cheating back in the backfield so far that they threw a penalty on threw a flag on him. And so, you know, I think that's a good sign that it looks like coming off the suspension and coming off of last season that he's a guy that you can rely on to create some pressure in a game.
If you can figure out a way so that I could watch the game in the studio with the sound down and you up, but not be three plays ahead, I'm down. Like, I would do that.
Yeah, right. Same.
But
my wife does it, and what my wife does is she pauses the game, and then she will kind of sync it up with the broadcast.
Yeah. You're just too far ahead for me. I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to pause radio. Eric Wood on the web.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Sure, hotline. I have to cram this in. Please don't let me go on about this, but what a gift for anybody the Colts play that they don't use Richardson on the short yardage plays. I mean, just think
right.
Think of the difference. And what the real crime of it is, Eric, the whole premise with Flacco is, hey, we got 53 grown men in here. We got to try to win. I'm sorry. Yes, you were the fourth overall pick. We got to try to win games. And then you obviously, egregiously do a thing that costs you better chances of winning games by having a quarterback who will not sneak. He will not move. There is no threat of that at all. Where do you have a guy on the sideline, the greatest physical freak ever at the position to come into the league? You know, how do you justify that?
Yeah, and to your point, it was either Chris or Sal in the pregame on the roundtable on WGR said that Jonathan Taylor's rushing yards are lower when Flacco starts. And a part of it is you don't have to account for Richardson. And in talking with Jason McCourty, he'll be my guest on the Saturday Night Buffalo podcast this week. I was talking with him today, and he said, from the production meetings, a lot of what they heard was, yes, the play where he took himself out of the game, obviously a sign of some immaturity at the position and whatnot, but it's not just that. It's a lot of off-the-field maturity stuff where, you know, what got him to the NFL, he's going to have to put in a lot more work at this level, and they're just not getting it from him, and that's part of the reason that we're seeing Flacco, and it's not simply just – it is that he gives them the best chance to win in Flacco, but a lot of it is Richardson's not earning the so that's concerning. Now, this is a guy that played 13 games in college. He went 7-6, and you made him the number 4 overall draft pick. That's a risk you take. And so, you know, obviously he's got a lot of time ahead of him. It's only year 2 for him, but the writing on the wall doesn't look great right now.
Right.
Eric, are all games, all opponents, all weeks created equal? I ask because the Bills have got obviously big injury concerns, especially at pass catcher. Kincaid from yesterday, Cooper and Coleman don't play in this game. McDermott has already ruled Coleman out. Sounds like we'll see about Cooper. We'll see about Kincaid. And it's the Chiefs coming in at 9-0, and you're at 8-2, and the one seed is still out there and all of that. if you're playing New England this week versus Kansas City, is it any different, or would you? Because I want to be very careful with these guys. Big picture in mind, I want the one seed. I'd love to take the Chiefs down, but I don't want to rush anybody out there that's in danger of further injuring themselves.
No, I'm with you, and no, not all games are created equal. You know, and the Bills are going to feel a big win. After practice, there's going to be a ton of national media around, as opposed to last week when you're playing the Colts. Now, this Bills team is used to all that national media attention through as many playoff games and big games and primetime games as they played, but this one's going to be big. It's what everyone's going to be talking about all week, and the guys know that games to play in, games at Highmark Stadium in the playoffs, this game is going to play potentially a major factor, but Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, just like how whether it's free agency or trades or whatnot, they're not willing to mortgage the future for the short term. I'd assume they'll take the same approach with these injuries and say, look, we're not just going to put a guy out there and further risk him being out for possibly extended periods of time further than what it would normally be or what it should be just to get them back for this game. And so, you know, it may turn into a different game plan because of that. And similar to how last week you saw different guys have to step up and, you know, maybe different schemes or pass route trees based upon who's available. But, you know, they're gonna have to make it work. And when you got 17 back there, I'd say you always have a chance.
It's probably the biggest game of the season in the NFL. It's become an incredible rivalry. The Bills have their wins, but only in the regular season. We know all of this already. How do you compare the two teams psychologically here, with the stakes being what they are, the Chiefs being undefeated, maybe for them, a possible greater, for what, however it manifests, a greater incentive to try to keep that going, I would think, and the Bills with, you know, revenge in their hearts after last year. I mean, do the two teams go into this game on kind of the same emotional plane, or maybe not?
I would say similar. I mean, both teams understand that the one seed ramifications of this game are there. Everybody wants that bye. You want home field advantage through the playoffs. You know, Kansas City to me almost seems like some of those Brady years where you're like, gosh, on paper this roster doesn't seem like it should be this kind of record, but they find a way to win at the end, and they just seem so confident at the end of games. I mean, yesterday you block a field goal to win it. There's some luck involved there, and there's been some luck with penalties or whatnot at the end of games. But regardless, even if a couple of those flip, they're still a one or two loss team. And it just seems like how does this happen each and every week with this team? Part of it's the fact that they have a really good defense that keeps them in games because their defense plays at such a high level to where if their offense is sputtering like it did last week, only putting up 16 points against Denver, you still get a win. And so, you know, the emotion for both sides, I mean, both teams are going to be up for it. I mean, this is almost like a division game at this point because you're playing them twice a year, and it's a lot, you know, when you have two good teams, there's going to be a lot of the same players that get retained each and every season because you want to keep this great roster together. And so a lot of familiarity between coaches and schemes, players going against each other. I'm sure it'll be a chippy, emotional game kind of both ways in this.
How about the idea here, Eric? Here's a hard one to end with. The idea with the Chiefs, and I suppose this has been said or can be said about the Bills, but especially quintessentially this Chiefs season so far, the idea of knowing how to win. Is that something you would sort of, from having had your experience as a player, like, is that a real thing? I tend to make fun of it. I'm not sure that would surprise you, because then I think you have to forget how to win when it stops. The randomness of close games. I think, you know, Mahomes is great, obviously, so there's an edge in having great players, but I think they're just really, you know, running super lucky.
There's been some games this year that it feels like they've ran lucky. Now, you know, you look back at the Super Bowl last year, and the whole time you're thinking, you know, if Kansas City gets the ball and Patrick Mahomes is in, you know, four down territory throughout, they're going to keep getting first downs and likely score. You know, do they? To me, I think a lot of it's on the quarterback being able to be super composed, not make mistakes at the end of the game, putting them in positions to make plays over and over. You got an experienced play caller in Andy Reid, who's been great for a long time. And so you know, whether it's knowing how to win games or you have experience in those situations so you know how to handle them and you're not overwhelmed by the situation. To me, they just look calm at the end of games to where it's I said this to Tom Brady before the Seahawks-Bills game. I said, I hope this isn't offensive to you, but to me right now, Patrick Mahomes looks like Tom Brady at the end of games where it's like, hey, as long as it's one score, we're fine. Like, we would jump up 14-3 on New England over and over just waiting for them to panic, and it never happened. So, to me, it's got that feel to it now where it seems like Mahomes is just calm and in control, almost in a cocky way, but he's earned the right to look like that at the end of games because he's proven it over and over.
Right. I did see a breakdown of their field goal block plays from the game. And I think Dan Orlovsky at ESPN had a thread of this going, or just one reel. He was talking, I think, on one of their platforms on TV, and there's just this breakdown of the player who made the block and like what he did and didn't do on the previous attempts. And you know, I you still got to make the play, and there's got to be some luck in there somewhere, but there also was, I think, maybe a lot of intent on what they were like, saved this opportunity for when it really mattered.
And you know what? Like, and the Bills are kind of at this point, too, when you've had the same staff for so long, you could get into those kind of details. You know, when you have a new staff, do you have the time to say, hey, we're going to mix up different field goal blocks to try and trick a guy in case it comes down to a field goal then? And I didn't watch that breakdown. I'm actually going to look at it when I'm done here. But because I'm interested to see it, but I'm assuming it was okay. We're avoiding a guy. We're you know, moving out there, and then all of a sudden at the end they completely blow up. It was I guess the left end on the field goal protection unit, and they run over him to get the block. And I'm assuming they were messing with him earlier, kind of deking out, you know, going one way or the other, so that he felt like on that one, okay, now they're going to move. Now they don't, and they flatback him. And they get the block.
Bills up 2 Sunday, 3 seconds left, Butker lining up from 40. Do I use my best field goal block move, or do I save it for January?
No, you use it, and then you come up with something different the next time.
Okay.
I don't know that Greg Rousseau can pull the Myles Garrett, but to me, I always feel like, nowadays, the easiest way to block one is if you got a guy athletic enough to jump the line. Now, if you land on somebody, it's a penalty and extends the drive. So you want to save it for a crucial moment. But when Myles Garrett jumps that line of scrimmage at 290 pounds, it seems like, well, what? Why don't more people do that? But,
good question. Yeah. Eric, thanks. Enjoy your week.
Yep, absolutely. You guys too.
All right, that's our dude Eric Wood on the Wester Hotline, and his appearance weekly here on WGR is brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com, and by Northtown Kia, West New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com.
That situation, this is not nothing, is when you try anything and risk the penalty, because if you get a penalty and you block the kick or they miss the kick, I mean, it's pretty bad if that happens, but if you do, they're still going to kick on the next play.
Right.
The penalty would hurt you worse in different, almost any different left, yeah, down and distance situations, clock situations, right. But last play of the game, try anything you can think of. 803-0550, Buffalo Bills Football Monday. We'll look for your calls again after the update. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.